Good morning. We're going to start forming the groups.
First group will deal with register contracts, and the second will be IANA, and the third, new GTLDs, and the fourth one, IDNs. So, you are going to pick a topic, and four or five people per group. We have two groups of four and two groups of five people each. Didier, please. Before starting, I have a concern. I hope I am not the only one. I hope that the translation unit is working. I'm a bit worried of the vice president's way of communicating. I thought we were a couple and we were all in it together, but this is a small point. When he distributes this evaluation form, blank form, in evaluation points, everybody should be able to evaluate the same thing. So these are elements that we can analyze as a whole. So this is a small detail. Every time he communicates, he says, the session starts at 7. You must be in the bus at 6:30. It's not true. It's 10 minutes walking from here to there. So the only obligation is to be here at 7. If there are buses, he can say, you are able to take the bus, or you will have to walk. And there are guests, we say, guests, the guest will talk to you. So is he with us? Does he think that he has instructions to give here? I don't know. He's vice president because he was elected by the ALSs. So we elected him, so we can also fire him. Thank you, Didier, for these comments. Thank you. You're very frank. And I'm open to all proposals. I would like to go there and have somebody else moderate the session. Yesterday we had talked about the evaluation form. I told you I'm not a specialist of information. You said you don't know. I said, no, I don't know the training, but I told him, do some proposals. That's what we do. We are. So if the way I communicate is bad, I can leave. That's not a problem. Everything I can say is that I am with you. I'm always with you. I've always been with you in the room. I've never left the room except if I have another session. I never thought that I was not with you. If I say he is going to talk to you in the future, I will say the speaker will talk to us as you want. There's no problem here. When you criticize, please give me the solution. Give me the solution, and I will do it. Okay. May I speak? When we do a comment, I hope that I will not do your work. I don't do your work. This is our work. Thank you, Didier. Thank you. I believe we are only a Tuesday morning, and we have still three more days, and both of you, we understood you, Tijani and Didier, so we'll continue. I don't think Tijani will leave. Didier said we'll correct things. It's only Tuesday. We have a lot of things to do, and I agree, if some people have other comments, they can present them calmly. We're not here to fight. Tijani also answered well that he was going to improve. He said that he's always open. If people have comments to do, please, they may do so. We still have three or four days together. and it's good to do present the comments, except and not wait at the end. So thank you, Didier. Thank you, Tijani.
Bonjour à tous.
My observation so far is the way Amana will react to comments and then the way Amana will present some of her issues. Sometimes when comments are made with the best of intentions, we discover that those comments are, you will not have imputations made to those comments. The comments are turned separately from what you actually intended. So I do not think Didier is trying to condemn Mr. Tijani. What he's trying to say is that the manner of approach, his style of leadership, that means he should try and avoid to be autocratic and then see himself as our servant because we elected him, so to speak. So that is exactly what he's trying to say. So and I wouldn't want Mr. Tijani to feel so bad and take it so personal. So if Didier made an observation that, okay, when you're talking to us, number one, we are not in a classroom situation whereby, yes, the teacher addresses the students, or we are not here as a master servant. We are all here as equals, but somebody must lead. And if we voted people in the position of authorities, so they should be able to respect the fact that, yes, any one of us could be on that seat. And so that is early. I want us to see contributions and the observations as objective as possible. So I don't think there's any quarrel here. So what Didier was saying is just trying to say, Mr. TJ, you should try and tone down the way and manner you address us as members of Afralo. Thank you.
Yes, merci, Gianni. I would advise that if somebody have any personal remarks to make, do it personally with him. Remember that we are in a family and then we have guests over here. It's very bad image on Afralo that, okay, we have to criticize in the open public like this. Thank you.
Merci, Dave.
Thank you, Dave. It's not the same topic. It's a question dealing with logistics. I would like to offer to Tijana and Jani and Fatimata to if we could clean the rooms, disinfect the rooms, because for now we accept it, but anything could happen. Thank you. Thank you, Michelle.
Donc, bonjour à tous, Olivier Crépin.
Hello, everyone. My name is Olivier Crépin Leblanc. I say it for the transcript. We are all tired. I know that I am very tired myself, and the trip and the logistic issues we've had. We all understand something. I said to my friend Tijani, evaluation forms are not perfect, and the entire program is not perfect. Why? Because it's the first time that such a program is put together. This is the first version, and maybe the 0.9 version, and you are part of the introduction of the program. You are the architect of what you want to hear and what you want to know and what you want to talk. The evaluation forms, if they are bad, write it down and maybe do a comment, write a comment with your own recommendations to how to do evaluation form. And I hope that this interview will not end on Friday. I hope that the following week and the weeks we will be able to continue the dialogue and we will be able even to implement a working group, the capacity building program. Okay, we did evaluation forms, that's one thing, but we can do a working group to modify together the program. Other regions will want to have the same program, so in order to help other regions, it would be good to have a group. Afralo group or at large group, I don't know. We will have to decide. Maybe it was your own choice if you want to do it as a Afralo group or at large group in order to improve the capacity program. So I know that there are changes. It's not easy. I believe that your comments are very well taken, and I hope we will have more comments. I hope that there are more comments, whether they're positive or negative. Also, positive. We would like to hear something positive, or it would be very depressing. But a few comments, negative, positive, and then we'll see what we can improve the whole. This is the right direction to take. When I saw that every day it started at 7 a.m., I thought, the third day, everybody will be in bed. They're going to arrive at 8:30. They will be really tired. They will come crawling in. I'm really happy to see that there are so many people still up. You've survived until Tuesday. We'll see Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. I hope we'll be as numerous as we are today until Friday. Have a nice day. And thank you, Olivier. I'd rather have criticism than not to have any. Thank you. So we're not talking about the group, the speakers. We will do it during the program. So we will have the communications, and then we will come back to it. You have to say your name before you start speaking. Okay, we are going to start the process on the policy development, and the first person who will talk about the general aspect of ICANN is going to be Marika Konings, who is the director, policy director at ICANN.
Having me again. My name is Marika Konings. I'm a senior policy director at ICANN, and I'm based in the Brussels office of ICANN. So, as already mentioned yesterday, today I'll be providing you with some more detail on how policy development works at ICANN. So I'll first start off very briefly, refreshing your minds on what ICANN's role is. I think you've already had presentations earlier in the week on ICANN, but I thought we would be good to maybe just briefly cover that. Then I'll go into how policy development works and who does what, talking a bit about should you be involved and how you can take part. So very briefly, I think you've already probably covered this in great detail. ICANN is about names, numbers, and parameters. So the names are delegating top-level domains, numbers, allocating IP address blocks, and parameters, maintaining databases on behalf of the IETF. All policies related to those areas are developed in a bottom-up manner, which involves all stakeholders. Again, I think this is just a reminder, because I'm sure many people have already mentioned the word during these days. ICANN is about multi-stakeholder, anyone takes part, private sector-led, bottom-up policy development. So there's a process in place by which all participants can contribute and come together to reach consensus on policy decisions. And our mission is the technical coordination of the DNS, acting in the benefit of the global internet user. And this is language that comes from the affirmation of commitments that was signed in 2009 between ICANN and the U.S. government. Just going to skip over this one, because I think we already covered this. Just very briefly, it's very far away and very difficult for you to see, but just on the overall structure, and again, I'm sure someone has already covered this with you as well, but on the one hand side, you have the supporting organizations, which are the policy development bodies within ICANN, and Those are the main focus of my presentation today. But you also have the advisory committees, such as the ALAC, the GAC, the Governmental Advisory Committee, the ESAC, the Security and Stability Advisory Committee. And those are the advisory committee that provide advice directly to the board. So who participates in ICANN? I think you probably see it in your communities itself as well. It's a whole range of different stakeholders with many different motivations. Some are here because they're advocating certain positions. Some are here because they want to learn and gather information. Some are technical experts that want to share their expertise. And I think, you know, getting involved in policy development, you need to ask yourself the question, you know, what is your motivation? What is your reason for being here? Again, I think also repeating something what others will have said, you know, ICANN is just one part of the ecosystem. There are many other organizations that are involved in this space that, you know, are some, you know, members of which are participating in ICANN. ICANN also has relationships with those organizations. So it's, you know, it's about working together and cooperation to make sure that everyone's informed and works together. So very important as well to emphasize what ICANN doesn't do, because there are sometimes misunderstanding on the roles and responsibilities or the remit that ICANN has to address certain issues. So we don't get involved in content on the internet, spam, internet security apart from DNS security, where we are very much involved. Financial transactions online, consumer protection law, data protection law, intellectual property law. I mean, that's all developed in other bodies. It might, of course, affect discussions or help inform opinions, but ICANN is not responsible for developing those kind of policies. So, you know, to give you then some examples what ICANN has done or does get involved in, these are some of the policies that ICANN has developed over the years. So I spoke yesterday briefly about the Uniform Dispute Resolution Policy, so that is a policy that addresses cyber squatting. That's already in existence for quite some year. There's a policy on the prohibition on use of Huawei's data for marketing. There's a policy that was adopted in 2004 that provides rules on how to transfer domain names between registrars, which is called the Inter-Registrar Transfer Policy. And not too long ago, restrictions were put in place to address domain tasting. Policies that also have been developed and which you've heard a lot about is the new gTLD program, and also, for example, current discussions on IDN ccTLDs and the fast track program. That's something that has been done by ICANN. And then on the address, on the number side, the IPv6 allocation, there's a global policy in place for that, and that's also something that, you know, has come up through ICANN. So as mentioned before, there are three supporting organizations within ICANN that develop policy in their own way. The generic name supporting organization, the country code supporting organization, the CCNSO, and the ASO, which is the address supporting organization. And I'll go into more detail for each of these. But at the end of the day, the ultimate decision maker on any policies is the ICANN board. But even though the ICANN board is the ultimate decision maker, I think it's very important to emphasize again that policy development is a bottom-up process. So in most of the supporting organizations, there's open participation. So that results in having very diverse participants that bring very diverse opinions and expertise to the table. They work on consensus-based decision-making. So the objective is really to come to consensus where everyone can find him or herself comfortable with the position that has been reached and the recommendations that are going to be made. But to be fair, it does often mean as well that the public debate is spirited and can be unrestrained, which is sometimes scary for people, because it does happen that people are very strong in their opinions or things might get personal. So, don't get scared by that. It sometimes happens. And I think we do have rules of behavior, and there are various mechanisms in place as well. If people feel that they have been unfairly treated or they're not being heard, that they can challenge those behaviors. So there are several mechanisms in place to make sure that everyone can participate in an equal and fair manner. So how can you participate? As I said, I'll go into more detail on how you can participate in each of the supporting organizations. But, you know, in general, public comment is always requested before any decision is made, and most of the time on various levels, at the start of the process, halfway through the process, at the end of the process, before the decision is taken, once it goes to implementation. So there are numerous opportunities where you can provide your input and your voice can be heard. And as I said, you know, you don't have to restrict yourself to, you know, one working group or one community. There are many in the ICANN community that take part in different groups or have different roles within the ICANN organization. So you don't need to restrict yourself to one, but you need to pick the one that you feel most comfortable with and where you feel, you know, your interests lie. So then going into a bit more detail. So first starting off with the GNSO policy development, and that's the area I'm most familiar with as I'm supporting the GNSO and its policy development activities. So the GNSO is the generic name supporting organization. That is the body within ICANN that's responsible for policy development related to generic top-level domains. And generic top-level domains are, you know, .com, .net, .info, the generic names compared to the CCTLDs, the two-letter code top-level domains. Currently, we have 21 council members from six different constituencies and stakeholder groups, also including NOMCOM appointees. And just to show you, we recently went through a major restructuring in the GNSO, which we're I think they're currently in the process of finalizing, but one of the outcomes there was restructuring the actual structure of the GNSO itself, apart from addressing, you know, how do we work, how do we operate. It was also looking how is the GNSO structured. And the compromise they came up was to restructure the GNSO into two houses. So on the one hand side, you have the contracted party house, where you have those bodies that actually have a contract with ICANN, which are the registries and registrars. And then on the other side, you have the non-contracted parties. So those are the organizations or bodies that have an interest in ICANN or represent a specific interest, but don't necessarily have a contract with ICANN. So that includes commercial constituencies. They are united in the what we call the CSG, the commercial stakeholder group. So that includes the business communities, the intellectual property constituency, and the ISPs. And then you also have the NCSG, which is the non-commercial stakeholder group, which represents the non-commercial users within the GNSO. And then you also have liaisons. We have a liaison currently from the CCNSO, and Alan Greenberg is serving as the ALAC liaison to the GNSO. So those liaisons, they participate in the discussions, they attend the meetings, they're on the mailing list, but they don't have a vote. That's the main difference, and they're not able to make motions and the like. So this is, you know, broadly the structure under which the GNSO operates. So how is policy then actually developed? So the way it works is that an issue is raised for consideration. So basically that means requesting an issue report. An issue report in the GNSO can be requested by three parties. So one, the board can ask for an issue report. An advisory committee can also ask for an issue report. And the GNSO council itself, a council member, can make a request for an issue report. Once that happens, in the case of the GNSO Council, a certain voting threshold needs to be passed in order for the request to be received positively, which is relatively low, so it doesn't require many votes to move ahead with an issue, which has been done on purpose to really make sure that there's not a group that can just block any kind of request for policy development. So once a request has been adopted, staff takes that away and starts working on what we call an issue paper or the issue report. And the objective of the issue report is really outlining the issue. what does it mean? You know, what are some of the issues that have been encountered? Why has this been raised? By who has it been raised? How are they affected by that issue? And it also includes a recommendation from ICANN's General Counsel whether the issue is in scope for policy development. As I explained before, ICANN has a specific mission and a mandate, so we want to make sure that, you know, policy development fits within that mandate and we're not looking at issues where, you know, we don't have any remit to do anything about, and that it fits within the remit of the GNSO, which relates to generic top-level domains. So, for example, if someone would ask us to look at registration policies for ccTLDs, we would have to say, no, it's not within your remit to do anything about that because this relates specifically to ccTLDs. Your focus is gTLDs. So based on that report and the recommendations, the GNSO Council then decides whether or not to move forward with a policy development process, so a PDP. So if the answer is yes and they feel that it is warranted to have a policy development process, a volunteer working group is formed. And I think, as I mentioned yesterday as well, the way the GNSO currently works is that working groups are open for anyone interested. So it's not limited to GNSO council members or members from the GNSO communities. It's for anyone in the community or even not within the ICANN community to join. We really try to get as broad as possible participation to make sure that all the different views are represented and that there are experts participating to really provide the working group with all the information they need to come to their recommendations. So a working group then spends normally, from my experience so far, I think at least a year and in most of the times longer, deliberating the issues, because it often involves quite a bit of work. First of all, you know, for everyone to get to the same level of understanding of the issue. Often then research needs to be undertaken to really, you know, get into the details of what the problem is, how it affects people. In certain cases, a working group might decide to conduct a survey or to conduct public discussions to really make sure that all the information they need is available. They then normally produce as well various iterations of their report to really ensure that what they are thinking, you know, to present their thinking, and also provide an opportunity for the community to provide input on the recommendations that they are considering putting forward. So based on those comments, and the GNSO working groups are currently very diligent in going through all those comments, and the way we work is we basically have a public comment review tool in which we outline each comment, basically provide the details on how the working group discussed or deliberated on that comment, and then as well provide an indication of what was done following that comment, whether any changes were made to the report or whether the working group felt that, you know, it wasn't necessary to make any changes and they provide a reason as to why they felt, you know, it was already addressed or they didn't agree with the comment that has been submitted. So at the end of that process, a working group normally comes up with a final report. And the final report contains the recommendations, and for those recommendations, it's then also indicated the level of consensus they have reached in that working group. So it gives an indication to the GNSO Council the level of support the recommendations have received. Of course, the objective of every working group is to come to unanimous consensus. But, you know, let's be realistic, that is not always the case. There are always differences of opinion, there might be minority views, and that's all documented in the report to really make sure that the Council understands who supports those positions in the report and what are the reasons for some for not supporting those. So then the GNSO Council considers those recommendations, and again, their deliberations also take place in their stakeholder groups and constituencies. So they form positions through deliberations with their respective communities. And on the basis of that, they take a decision and take a vote on whether or not to adopt the recommendations. And in certain cases, you might see as well, if we're talking about consensus policies, which are a very specific outcome of GNSO policy development, consensus policies are those policies that are binding on contracted parties. So once adopted, they would go into the contracts and can be enforced by ICANN. I probably should clarify that consensus policies can only be developed on a very specific set of topics which are defined in the contracts. So they cannot be developed on any kind of issue. They're very narrowly defined, and we have actually separate presentations on, you know, talking about what is consensus policies, which topics are suitable for consensus policy development. So I'm happy to point you in the right direction if you're interested in learning more about that specific issue. So once the GNSO Council adopts the recommendations, they are forwarded to the board. There will be another public comment period before the board considers the recommendations. And then it's for the board to decide. Again, if we're talking about consensus policies, if they are adopted with a supermajority of the GNSO Council, the board basically needs a supermajority to overturn them as well. So it's really bottom-up. It's not that, you know, the GNSO Council makes recommendation and then the board can just say, oh, we don't really like them. We say no. There are specific safeguards built in that if there is a supermajority consensus or supermajority support from the GNSO Council, the board really needs to come up with really good reasons and a very high voting thresholds to overturn them. And then, again, even if they would do that, there are certain mechanisms in place to encourage discussions between the GNSO and the board to come to agreement. So once the board adopts the recommendations, they then move to what we call implementation. So that's the stage where staff takes the recommendations and works on an implementation plan. Usually that also coincides with further community discussions or, you know, checking back with the GNSO Council or the working group, if it still exists, to really make sure that the implementation follows what was the intent behind the recommendations. Because, as you can imagine, in certain instances, recommendations might be really specific and provide, you know, the exact wording of what they would like to see happen. But in certain cases, it might be more general guidance. And then I can staff sometimes needs to come back and say, well, you know, this can be done in way A or B. Community, what do you think is the best way, taking into account the recommendations and the working group deliberations on that issue? And then at a certain stage, when that implementation plan is final, the policy becomes into operation and basically is applies to all the parties that it affects. And as I said, you know, each phase includes public comment period. So again, there are various steps of the process which you can use to provide input. So to just give you an example, I mean, I think we're all familiar with the new GTLD process, and although it's not the typical example, because as you know, this process has taken quite a number of years to get where we are now, I think it just gives you just a brief overview of you know, how it works. So basically the discussion started in 2004 with the issue being raised, an issue report being prepared, and the GNSO deciding to move forward with the PDP on this. It then took two years to actually develop the policy recommendations, which were then adopted by the Council in September of 2007. The board adopted them in 2008, and that was the start of the implementation process. And I think this is a case where you can see that even though, you know, the GNSO tried to provide as much detail as possible, there were quite a number of areas where further work needed to be done with the community to really work out the implementation details. And as a result, you know, the program was adopted earlier this year and is about to launch at the start of next year. Some of this I already mentioned yesterday, you know, what policies are currently being considered or being reviewed in the GNSO. The first policy that's under review is the inter-registrar transfer policy. As I mentioned before, that was adopted in 2004, and as part of that implementation of the policy, the GNSO Council decided that it would be necessary to immediately start a review to really make sure that the policy was working as intended. Based on that review, they grouped several issues together, and they're going to be a set of five policy development processes. Okay. I'll go even slower. So basically, there will be five policy development processes, and we're currently in the third of those, which is called IRTP Part C. And that's a group that's currently open for volunteers. So if you're interested in that issue, have a look at the GNSO website and hopefully you'll join. I already spoke yesterday as well on the possible review of the UDRP. The GNSO Council will need to take a decision shortly whether they want to go ahead with that review or not. I also spoke to you about the post-expiration domain name recovery. That's now at the level of board adoption. So if the board adopts it, it will be a new consensus policy related to this topic. The GNSO has requested an issue report on the notion of thick whois for all incumbent GTLDs. So that's an issue that's starting now. We'll be preparing an issue report, and the council will need to decide on the basis of that whether a policy development process should go forward. There has been a request for an issue report on uniformity of contracts to address registration abuse. So that's another one that the council at some point will need to decide whether that should go further into policy development. And as I mentioned yesterday as well, we actually have 25 policy projects ongoing, some of which directly relate to policy development, some are relating to the GNSO Improvements Project, which is basically, you know, the restructuring and improving, and I think you also went through the ALAC improvement, so it's a similar exercise. And then we also have a number of cross-community working groups, and I think in ALAC you're very familiar with that as well. There are certain issues where there's a notion that there should be cross-community collaboration on, so joint working groups or cross-community working groups have been formed to address certain of those topics. So how can you get involved in GNSO policy development? As mentioned before, all GNSO working groups are open to anyone for anyone to join. The only requirement is that you fill in a statement of interest. So that's to really make sure that all the participants stayed up front, you know, what their background is, on whose behalf they're participating, if they have any financial interest in the potential outcome of the process. And I think, as everyone always says, it's no problem to have an interest as long as you state it publicly and everyone is aware. If you don't have the time to join a working group, because as I said yesterday as well, it does, you know, require a commitment. Most of the GNSO working groups meet on a weekly basis, at least for an hour. Some meet an hour and a half or two. Of course, you're required to prepare, review documents. Certain tasks may be assigned to working group members. So it does require time and resources. So if you don't have time for that, you know, consider participating in public comment periods and provide your input in that way. If you want to become more involved, you know, consider becoming a member of a constituency or a stakeholder group. They also have certain processes in place in which they participate and provide input or share information. So that might be an avenue that, you know, you would like to consider. And then you can also sign up for the policy, the monthly policy update. I think they have the link later on in the presentation. As I mentioned yesterday, you know, from the policy staff, we provide a monthly update on all our activities and specifically highlight which areas are either open for public comment or are looking for volunteers or other kind of input. There are a couple of groups currently looking for volunteers. As I mentioned before, the IRTP Part C working group is starting its meetings in the beginning of November. So if you want to join that group, you know, let the GNSO Secretariat know. I spoke yesterday as well about the Consumer Metrics group. That one is also just getting started, so plenty of room for people to join. There's a Whois survey working group that's developing a survey on Whois. They're still welcoming members too. We also have a cross-community working group that's actually looking at the rules that should be in place for cross-community groups from a GNSO perspective. But again, that group is also looking for other perspectives and is welcoming others from other communities. And there shortly should be a call for volunteers for what we call a fake renewal notices drafting team. There's an issue related to fake renewal notices, and at this stage the council is looking for further information from registrars, and this group will be tasked to develop a specific request for information. So now moving on to the next supporting organization, which is the CCNSO, the Country Code Supporting Organization. And I have to admit, I'm less familiar with their policy development processes, but if you're really interested in the details of this group, there are several colleagues around that I'm sure are more than happy to provide you further details. So the CCNSO, there are only CCTLD managers are members of the CCNSO. It's a voluntary organization, so not all CCTLD managers are members of the CCNSO, but currently they have 120 members, and I think they're actually in the process of approving their the 121st member soon. So their meetings, and they also meet at ICANN meetings, and working groups are open to members and non-members. And in this context, the CCNSO Council is really the administrative body. The decisions are really taken by the CCNSO as a whole. They have 18 councillors, 15 which are appointed by members, and 3 which are appointed by the nominating committee. So the CCNSO, they focus on activities that are related to CCTLD communities, but on those issues that have a global perspective, because they each, in their countries, have their own processes and policies to address issues that are of relevance to their specific CCTLD. So they only address issues that are interesting from a global perspective to all CCTLDs at the CCNSO level. They also provide their policy recommendations to the ICANN board, and they also work on the basis of consensus across their different constituencies and CCTLDs. And they also, like the GNSO, try to involve other SOs and ACs in their work. Of course, in the CC context, they have a specific relationship, for example, with the GAC, where they have many issues in common, and you see that they have several groups where they actively collaborate with each other. So, to a certain extent, policy development in the CCNSO works in a general way in a similar manner as it's done in the GNSO, but there are some little nuances that are different. So in the CCNSO, is actually an issue is raised by 10 members of the CCNSO, or a regional organization, or the ICANN board, or a council member itself. The council then prepares the issue report and appoints the issue manager, and they also work through an issue report, and they're more flexible in their timelines. In the GNSO policy development process, there are very strict timelines in the bylaws, which need to be followed, where in the CCNSO it's more flexible, and basically depending on the issue, they set their respective timeline. So based on the issue report, like with the GNSO, the council then decides whether or not to launch a PDP. They also work on the basis of an interim and then a final report, which are also put out for public comments. They also have a council vote, where they also have, I think, certain voting thresholds, and they need to have a member's vote. And that's very different from the GNSO, where basically the council takes the vote and that's the decision. But in the CCNSO, there's also a certain threshold of members that need to adopt it. And actually, after the recommendations then go to the board, and after adoption, they're only actually applicable to the members of the CCNSO. So those that are not members don't follow under those policies. So some examples of CCNSO policies that have been developed over the years. They had a change of the ICANN bylaws in 2004-2005. They're currently working on a PDP on IDN CCTLDs. So what is an IDN CCTLDs, and looking at including those CCTLDs in the CCNSO. And there are a couple of issues that they're currently working on, I think more in a kind of pre-PDP discussion, which are likely or might go into a policy development process, such as a delegation and redelegation and the retirement of CCTLDs. So the CCC PDP, the country code policy development process, can only be used for is only relevant for a limited number of predefined global areas. So unlike the GNSO, where basically any issue that's relevant to generic top-level domains can be considered, in the CCNSO, it's a very specific list of topics that can be considered, which is, I think, included in the ICANN bylaws. As I said before, because most of the policies are actually developed at the local level, so anything to do with, you know, how they, what kind of who is they use, registration requirements, vertical integration, accreditation of registrars, that's all done at a local level. There are, of course, alternatives to policy developments, which include guidelines and advice. So those are ways they can work as well. So how can you get involved into CCNSO policy development discussions? Yeah, attending CCNSO meetings, as said before, they also have their dedicated meetings here where they, you know, talk through their issues. They also have a CCNSO council meeting. You also see them meeting with some of the other supporting organizations. For example, on Monday, the GNSO and the CCNSO met together to discuss issues that are of joint interest. There are several workshops that they organize. As said before, they also organize numerous public comment processes. But if you're, of course, more interested in what is happening at a local level, check what you can do to get involved at the local level, because most of them have specific policy development processes as well at a local level that might involve similar steps as I've spoken about here. So, and the last of the supporting organizations, which is the ASO, and time for ICANN numbers. So the ASO is the address supporting organization, which is set up through a memorandum of understanding between ICANN and the NRO, the number resource organization. And the one task the ASO has is to handle global policies, which affect IANA's handling of addressing resources, so IP addresses. So I think to understand the ASO, you basically need to understand a little bit about the local structure. So the regional internet registries, which you have one in each region, AFRINIC for Africa, EPNIC for the Asia-Pacific region, ARIN for North America, LACNIC for South America, RIPE for Europe, and then, of course, you have the NRO, which is the overarching organization. So they basically, the regional internet registries, they receive addresses from IANA and they allocate them on a regional level. So the five RIRs, they then cooperate through the NRO, which is the number resource organization. So I think as I explained for most of the CCTLDs, RIRs also develop policies locally through a bottom-up process. It's actually only those policies that affect IANA that are then called global policies and that make their way to ICANN. So it only becomes a global policy if it is agreed by all the regional internet registries, and then it's channeled through the ASO and then ratified by the ICANN board before it goes to implementation. So it's really very limited cases that actually happens. So how to get involved in ASO policy development? The answer is really here that you need to get involved through your regional internet registry, because that's how they develop policy. I do believe that they are not limited to regions, so even though you might be from one region, I think you are able to also participate in RIRs from another region. They also conduct open meetings. Normally they have their own specific meetings. I think, you know, members of those organizations do gather at ICANN. The ASO itself meets at ICANN. I think the last couple of meetings they've organized some public sessions to encourage participation and sharing of information for the ICANN community. So I would encourage, if you're interested, to check out the schedule. And I believe it's usually on Wednesday that they have their open workshop. And all their policy proposals are discussed on public mailing lists where anyone can participate. So just want to very briefly touch upon advisory committees. You know, that's another vehicle to get involved. I mean, you have the policy development side, but there's also the advisory committee structures within ICANN. And they provide direct advice to the ICANN board. And that can be on, you know, any issue. They can also provide advice on the policy that's developed through one of the supporting organizations. And I think very recent examples has been the GAC, for example, providing advice on the new GTLD program, for example. And you know, you're very familiar, I presume, with the advice that ALEC provides on various issues to the ICANN board or also to other supporting organizations. So, well, you're very familiar with the at-large, and you have the Governmental Advisory Committee, the GAC, the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, the ASAC, and the Root Server System Advisory Committee, the ARSAC. And I've provided links for you here, and each of them, you know, work in their own way in developing advice. So if you're interested, I would, you know, advise you just have a look at those links and see if there are ways to participate. And again, you know, they sometimes might make use as well of opportunities for public input or participation. So there are other ways that you can involve, you know, apart from joining policy development activities, the ICANN Fellowship Program, which allows those interested to come and travel to ICANN meetings and participate and engage with others in the community. As mentioned, I think all of the supporting organizations and advisory committees have nominating committee appointees. So if you're interested in a leadership position, please have a look at their website, and you're encouraged to send in your details. Again, I think they do have specific information on there what that requires, because it does require a certain commitment and a certain time you need to make available to participate. And so make sure that you are aware what it requires before you sign up. And as mentioned before, you know, please sign up if you're interested in following policy development on a regular basis. Sign up for the policy update. It's available, I think, in 5 different languages, and you can just subscribe on our website. I think that was it. Questions?
Thank you very much, Marika. Bonjour tout le monde, je m'excuse.
Hello all, I'm sorry for being so late. But you understand. Do you have questions for Marika? Yovi? Yovi?
Bonjour, mon nom est. A public comment, because you said that each phase we have a public comment period. So, if you take each working group, do you have interim report and final report? So my question is that, do we have the public comment for the working group? If the policy is adopted by the board, is there also a comment, or once you go through after the working group and then the council itself, do we have a way of maybe talking about comment again? And that is my question. Thank you.
Thank you for that question. I think I'll speak now from the GNSO, because I think the others work in a similar way. But in the GNSO, if you look in the ICANN bylaws, there the policy development process requirements are outlined there. And currently, there are 3 required public comment periods when a PDP gets started. One is at the start. So when a PDP is initiated, there's a requirement to have a public comment period to announce that a PDP has been initiated and ask people for input on that issue as the work gets started. There's a requirement to have a public comment period following the initial report. And there's a requirement to have a public comment period after the GNSO Council adopts it, but before the ICANN board considers it. But in addition to that, working groups are able to have as many public comment periods as they like. So they can either put out further iterations of a report, and I think in the recent year, you might have seen several proposed final reports, Our working groups felt that they made significant changes between their initial report and their final report that warranted another round of public comments. Working groups are also free to put out specific questions. So if they feel that there are specific questions that they would like to get input on, they may do that. There have been working groups that have put out surveys as a way of getting input. So although I think the minimum requirement is 3 public comment periods in different steps of the process, I think in practice you'll see there are more than 3, and you'll also see that most working groups will organize, in addition to public comment periods, public sessions at ICANN meetings, where they also provide an opportunity for people to provide oral input or have an exchange of views with working group members on certain issues, which are then as well taken back by the working group and taken into account as they go forward.
Oh, thank you, Marika, again. Yes, Obiela?
How do people get involved in discussions on the root servers?
I have to admit, I'm the least familiar with the RSEC. I think they're one of the bodies that actually they don't really meet at ICANN. I think they meet at some of the other organizations, and I'm actually looking, I think Cheryl actually might know more about that, so if I can maybe defer to Cheryl.
Cheryl is embarrassed to say she was taking instructions from Gisela, so if you'd care to repeat the question, Cheryl would be delighted.
The question was how to get involved in RSAC activities, in the root server.
That is actually a little bit more complicated than is first thought. RSAC, which is the root server security advisory group, is a very specialist, very particular skill-setted small advisory group. So first of all, just like the Security Stability Advisory Committee, the SSAC, one has to have particular technical skills that they desire. So if you are someone who is involved directly with the technology of the servers, or you believe you have for example, a regional or sub-regional security expertise in the matter, for the SSAC, and I may as well cover both at the one time, for the SSAC, one could approach directly the current chair, and like all parts of the ICANN community, the advisory committees and the support organisations all have their leadership listed with contacts in the wiki that we have, or in the case of those two advisory committees, less wiki and more web page. And you would basically be accepted or rejected depending on their needs for your expertise and your expertise. The at-large advisory committee, which you will be hearing a lot more about, or have, I believe, Olivia spoke to you yesterday about our ALAC, the at-large advisory committee, appoints liaisons not to the RSAC, because they are a much smaller, much more specialised, much more particular group who, in fact, don't even necessarily meet at ICANN meetings. They are far more likely to meet at Internet Engineering Task Force, IETF, meetings, or some similar activity. So to that end, the RSAC has recently had its review, and with its review, there will be recommendations that come out. So if you are interested, I would suggest you ask your regional leaders, or do it yourself, to watch this space, because there may be liaison relationships being developed. But at this moment, it would be, in fact, by either knocking on the door and being rejected or accepted, possibly the former rather than the latter, or being, how shall I say, requested because your particular talents match some of their needs. The SSAC, so I can complete that suite, just to be very clear, even though the At-Large Advisory Committee appoints a liaison to that very, very specialist group, we simply recommend their bona fides and their capabilities are checked and either the recommendations are accepted or rejected. And if they're rejected, we simply need to come up with new people to put forward. So they're very peculiar, very particular, slightly more closed advisory committees, but they still do everything in a transparent and accountable way. However, any recommendation from any advisory committee is subject to the public comment cycle that ICANN builds its model around. So each and every one of you can contribute to the policy development part of what these advisory committees do. You also need to realise that when they put out an advisory, which is more common from the SSAC than the RSAC, but an advisory is an opportunity for you to take that material to local country and to have webinars and materials presented so that your interested people understand what the new advice is. Sorry to take more than time than I should, but it's a mystery, those two.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. I think you're going to thank Marika. Do you have another question? Oh, you want to make last one? Yeah, go ahead, Marika.
So I just want to thank you all very much for giving me the opportunity to present here and share this information with you. I did provide on the last slide, which I presume has been sent around, links to further information on each of the supporting organization and advisory committees. And I just want to say as well, you know, if you have further questions, you know, just if you see me in the hallway, you know, stop me and talk to me. Gisela and Marilyn also have our contact details, or can put you in contact with the appropriate person depending on which organization your question relates to. So we're really here to help you and really encourage your participation in these efforts. And I wish you a lot of success for the rest of your meetings. Thank you.
Thank you, Marika. Now we're going to give the floor to our... Oh, you have a question? Is it about... Policies. Okay, so I think we had other questions too, but just go ahead very quick because we're running out of time right now.
Sorry, good morning. Thanks for the presentation. My name is Ibrasila from africhosting.com. I would like to know the policies actually that occur if when resellers, when domain name resellers loss is registrar, what will happen to his client?
ICANN policies only affect contracted parties. There are certain provisions in the new REA that flow through certain obligations resellers have vis-à-vis the registrar, but consensus policies themselves are only binding and enforceable on contracted parties, and as ICANN doesn't have direct contracts with resellers, some of those obligations might not apply to them depending on what follows through the REA, but I know it's an issue that's often raised, and hopefully more might be done in the future. But as it stands, consensus policies only apply to contracted parties.
Thank you again, Marika. If you have any further questions, you can send it to the list, and you'll get the appropriate reply. from anyone who knows the question. Baudouin, we don't have... I have an announcement to make.
C'est pas une question. Je voulais juste
we have a meeting with the board at 8:30. We'll have to move from this room to B12 at 8:25. And we still have two presentations to listen to. So please, let's wait, you know, and we'll have the opportunity to ask questions. I mean, if it's for Marika, as she already said, is it for... Okay.
Je voulais juste
very quickly, please. Thank you.
Baudet Chombe, I wanted to present my concern. We're here for a capacity building workshop, and we would like to understand everything that is being done at ICANN. But if we don't have enough time to exchange ideas with people here, it's going to be dangerous for us, and it shouldn't be discussions that is aside. It should be there should be exchanges, dynamic exchanges, so everybody can understand. Thank you, Baudouin. This is a very good idea. We thought about it, but what we're trying to do is to give the most, the greatest quantity of information on what is happening. So since we had everybody here, we were able to talk about everything that is happening, and we will be able to go in depth. And we can ask an in-depth discussions on a certain topic, and the staff will give us the person in line to do a conference on this topic, and we can ask questions and answers in addition to the list. So we were not able to do two topics or three topics today. We forget the others because we don't know when we'll have the opportunity to have everybody under one roof and to have all ICANN respond a person in charge to tell us their opinion. When it's an ICANN reunion meeting, Marika has a very heavily loaded agenda, and Mandy and Marika also, and everybody who wanted to do the presentations, they don't have the time to stay with us for 2 hours to listen to our questions. And there, I hope we understand each other, and we were trying to do as best as we can. Of course, we can always go in depth. I will give Olivier the floor back. He will talk to us about development processes for at large. Olivier, our president. Thank you very much, Fatimata. Et Olivier Crépin-Leblanc. I am here with my colleague, Cheryl Langdon-Oren. I'm going to...
Or I could say en franglais, avec la moitié en français and half the other part in English, but I think that will probably confuse les interprètes. So basically, if we can go over to the first page, please. Quick organizational diagram of at large. Because we're short of time, we've already discussed this yesterday. I've shown, we discussed the fact that we're divided into five regions with at large structures in each region, regional at large organizations, and the ALAC. And I have to slow down as well, which I will. And the seat 15, with the number 15 person that you saw yesterday walking around, and who, by the way, kept his shirt until the end of the day. Hopefully another shirt will appear on him today. So if we go over to the next page, please. This, again, is a page from yesterday's presentation, what is at large. And what I wanted to do was to focus on the second part of the page, which effectively says what is our work. And the work of the At Large Advisory Committee, and, of course, supported by the whole community at large, is to issue comments in response to ICANN public comment requests, to issue comments on any subject, process, structure, policy, or topic which it deems important to comment on in ICANN, issue comments about any external process linked to ICANN in one way or other and which affects Internet users. And, of course, every time it issues comments, it has to take part not only getting all of the input from everyone, but it can also take part in cross-community working groups within ICANN as having at-large or ALAC participants. And the way that it does that actually is to send, and I think that we mentioned it earlier, it sends either ALAC people or it will send at-large people. So, you know, some of you could go into the cross-community working groups on behalf of at-large and be our voice on that working group. And that's really, really, really important. So really what we are is the horrible neighbor who keeps on commenting about, you know, the house and says, oh, look, your house is nice, but, oh, your door is horrible. You have to change that door. It was red. You need to put it in blue. It's nicer in blue. And, of course, it does annoy people sometimes because they don't like someone else to comment on policy and on things which they sometimes think is their own doing. On the other hand, if the comment is made in a certain way, nicely and productively and constructively, then it gets listened to in a much better way. Mm-hmm. So anything that you wish to add to this, Cheryl, because Cheryl also has some specifics that she can add.
Olivier, thank you. This is Cheryl Langdonor for the transcript record. I think some of your last points I was going to pick up later, but I will insert now. When you notice how positive I am for the people around this table, when you are in a work group, because you should be, the work groups can be quite demanding in time and particularly difficult for some telecommunications areas. But there is never, ever only one way to be involved. There is always the Adobe Connect rooms and the telephonic exchanges that we have, but there is always specific email lists and there is always wikis where comments can be wrought. I have worked in probably more work groups. In fact, there is only one part of the organisation I have not contributed to a work group in, and that is the ASO. I must fix that. So I think I can speak from some experience here. I have been in work groups, and you can be in work groups, where effective participation does not mean you need to turn up to a single telephonic meeting, but you have contributed to comments on drafting that has been done, and you have used the wikis, and you are active, or perhaps not, on the lists. I'm big on the telephone. Oh, I'm big everywhere. That's it. But do not think just because you have power outages or the mobile phone cost for communication is too high that you cannot be involved. You can be involved and you will enjoy bringing the voice from your region to the table. Thank you, Olivier.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. And in fact, may I also add one last thing on what you just mentioned, the mobile phone costs being high. In fact, on any telephone conference call, as some will find out or will know already because you have taken part, rather than you having to call a number, ICANN can call you. It's like receiving a telephone call. So, of course, in some situations with regards to Cheryl, she often is doing her everyday life and also doing other things by being called. And, you've been in all sorts of situations being called.
I will confess, and I have no problem with it being on the record, yes, I have, in fact, finished a work group call from my shower.
Okay, thank you, Cheryl. Next slide, please. So just a reminder on this diagram which we saw yesterday, we function in a purely bottom-up fashion, which means that the at-large structures feed information and input into the regional at-large organizations, and that information goes up to the ALAC. And then, of course, as we had the visit from Marika earlier, the information from the ALAC, so the input from the ALAC, goes straight into the overall ICANN process of commenting and recommendations, etc. Now, how does it do it? Well, let's take two case scenarios. The first one being a concern that an at-large structure raises, and the second one being a response to the public comment periods, which I'm sure you're very well aware of now. So if we can have the next slide, please. So here is an example of an at-large structure input, and I'm sorry that the characters are a little bit small, but I'll try and summarize and explain to you. So at the beginning, in red, you've got a possible at-large comment, possible ALS comment, so an at-large structure wishes to comment on something, and so consensus has to be achieved at RALO level. So if there is consensus at RALO level, that is passed on to the ALAC, and then the ALAC is discussing it with the other RALOs, because, of course, the other RALOs have to agree if the ALAC is going to issue a statement. Once the other RALOs agree with each other, it's passed on over to the ALAC again, and the ALAC then discusses it with its committee members. And if we move on to the next level, then a statement is issued. A statement is put on the wiki and discussed. It's a draft statement. It's somebody drafts it. It's put on the wiki. Next page, please. Yes. It's put on the wiki, and an internal comment call is issued. And that you must have seen these on the lists. A statement is put out pointing to the wiki. Please do comments if you want to amend it, change it, and so on. And once that is amended and commented on, the statement is sent out. The reason for something to be as complicated as this, because it appears to be complicated, mm-hmm. is because it needs to have several layers of safety. Prior to 2003, input from at large went directly to the board or directly to the outside comments. And what you ended up with were the people who were most vocal about issues sometimes were extreme in their views and did not reflect the overall view of the whole community, which introduced all sorts of problems.
Oh, yeah.
So having several layers of consensus building makes sure that the statement that is going to be issued by the at-large advisory committee and that is going to be taken into account by the ICANN process is a statement that reflects the whole community consensus and not anybody's extreme ideas in at-large, because at-large is not an extreme organization. ICANN is not an extreme organization. We have to find the middle of the road. So that's the process.
Olivier, thank you for allowing me, Cheryl Langdon, or for the transcript record to intervene. I think it is important for each of you representing your ALSs to know for the public comments part of this process, where ICANN has called for a public comment, any individual, any ALS, anyone you want to get the cleaner to do it, the guy down the road, anyone who has an opinion can put that directly into the ICANN process. So there's always a couple of pathways. And if there is a minority view, that is a good way to be heard. Sorry, Olivier, I just thought I'd make that point.
Thank you, Cheryl. That's a very good point. And that's the nature of ICANN, isn't it? Anybody can comment. Anybody can get involved. So quickly, the second diagram that you're seeing here now is the process that is used in response to a public comment request. There are public comments that are put on the ICANN website. And in this particular situation, there is a discussion that takes place within at-large, or within the ALAC, to find out whether at-large wishes to make a comment. And if there is such a thing, then consensus is achieved. And again, we have the comment being put on the wiki. Everybody is asked to comment on the comment, which is interesting. Because, and of course, if the comment is about the public comment, so you can comment on the comment that will deal with the public comment. Mm-hmm. If you still understand what I'm talking about by now, you're very good. And we only have a few minutes to finish, but just to say, this diagram will be available to all of you as well. I think we you can make, so you can study in your time, in your own time as well. But it's quite straightforward in that we always make sure that everybody's voice is reflected in the statement, except if it's an extreme opinion that no one else shares, in which case that can be a minority opinion. I think that's all for today, so thank you very much. Two questions we can take, and then afterwards, of course, we'll be here for the rest of the week, so if you have any more questions, you can either email us or come to see us later in the week.
Okay.
Pastor Peters.
Yes.
In raising public questions or issues that Allah could make statements to, are they issues that are basically related to ICANN activities or public issues that would one way or the other affect ALAC's activities, but they are not directly ICANN's issues?
Right. Okay. Cheryl Langdonor for the transcript record. I am more than happy to talk to all of you at length later, but here is the very short answer to your question. What ALAC does is limited to what is in the mission and scope of ICANN. So whilst many of us may have our hearts in governance lists and activities in IGF and in other things like capacity building, what we have to focus on in ALAC and at large in ICANN is, I fear, but it is, however, the way it is, limited to numbering, naming, and nomenclature on the internet. So there's a hard stop between what we can do here and what we need to do elsewhere. Okay?
Thank you, Cheryl. And just to add a couple of words, actually, numbering names and numbers, basically, yes. It doesn't need to be internal to ICANN. For example, recently there were comments that we as the at-large advisory committee made on the IANA process. That is something that happens outside of ICANN. It's a bidding process for the renewal of a contract. But because it affects ICANN directly, we were able to comment about it because it is still dealing with names and numbers.
Okay, thank you. Sorry.
Thank you, and apologies for having to go that quickly, but as I said, we'll be back a bit later so we can speak a bit later. Thank you.
You will recognise us in the corridors, I'm sure.
The Borden ALAC meeting is in room B12, where we had the Afralo showcase. Please proceed.
Yes.
Exit the room to your left. Thank you.
Can we come back in the room here? Is the room...
La réunion avec le comité exécutif a lieu dans la salle B12 qui se situe dans la même salle où nous avions le Afralo Showcase. En sortant de cette salle sur votre gauche, vous suivez le couloir, vous allez y arriver. Et dépêchez-vous, s'il vous plaît. Merci.
Et vous êtes tous invités, bien sûr, à être dans l'audience pour voir comment ça se déroule. Voilà.
Can we come back? À 11 heures seulement. S'il vous plaît. Can we come back? Can we come back in this room?